I know. It's echoing real good. anyways. talking to this Jehovah Witness, I found out what a Jehovah Witness believes about who goes to heaven and who doesn't go to heaven. The people that go to heaven are the original 144,000. We knew that, right? But according to their thing, people that were Jehovah Witnesses before 1935 are the part of the 144,000. And then 1935 was the deadline. Anybody after 1935 is just going to have to stay on the earth and clean up garbage or something. I don't know what. But what a blessing for eternity. And according to their statistics, every year they have a Lord's Supper, I guess you'd call it, where they eat a cookie and they drink some wine like the Catholics, and they but the only people that can do it is the original 144,000 people. Really, anybody who's not of the original 144,000 cannot take communion. That's just their rules. And this last year, there was under 1,000 people left of the original 100. Yeah, there's under 1,000 of the original 144,000. Now this is where it gets interesting. According to the Jehovah Witnesses, which I think there's some kind of satanic influence in the organization, according to the Jehovah Witnesses, when the last of those 144,000 die, when the last person dies, God is going to return to the earth. And he's going to annihilate anybody who is not capable of becoming a good Jehovah Witness. And that's when he's going to set up the kingdom where they're going to live on the earth and they're going to live in heaven. So after 1,000 more people die, there's going to be a mysterious disappearance of a bunch of people. Kind of sounds like the rapture. And then he's going to set his kingdom down on the earth and they're going to worship the God who's going to come from, who's going to be the Antichrist. Isn't that amazing? And it's that close. They're within 1,000 people of this actually happening in order to maintain their organization. And the Antichrist, if the rapture took place at that time, they'd have, you know, instantly 8 or 9 million, how many there is, Jehovah Witnesses worldwide, even more than that probably. Yeah, lined up already, just ready to follow them. That just tells you, man, that's not even Bible, but it's just another thing that shows you how close we are to the Lord actually coming back and getting us out of here. Really, it's a blessing. But in Ukraine, I've been living in Lviv for 2 years, just over 2 years. And when I first got to Ukraine, I had this PBI attitude. These PBI guys get out of there and they get this attitude like, I'm the missionary. I know everything about it now. I've been through Baptist missions with Dr. Ruckman. I don't need anything, you know. And I'm going there on the field with some of these guys that have been on the field for about eight or nine or even 11 years, one fellow in particular. And I really messed up some stuff right off the bat. The guy I was working with was really liberal in everything he did. He'd take the teen group out and they'd watch the Lord of the Rings for the teen club, you know, meeting. And I was rebuking them, which wasn't my position really to be doing. I should have been taking them to the side and saying, brother, I don't believe this is right, or even separating from them along that line. But what it ended up doing is it really cost the correspondence course. We have a correspondence course through our track work, and he split and took the correspondence course with him, except for 17 people. And actually starting over this last February, not this year, but the year before, he left and left me 17 people in a correspondence course as my church. And through track evangelism since last February, we brought it back up somewhere around 150 people. People who write back from correspondence, from handing out tracts. We have a little church going in Lviv, but it's not. We're a total of about 35 miles from the Polish border, and I believe besides the people in our church, there's only about 4 people in the whole entire city that's not Catholic. It's really diehard Catholic. It's one of the Pope's places that he goes. I can see it out my window, the church that the Pope visits when he comes to Ukraine. Just lots and lots of Catholics over there, and they don't like us. they teach in their they got a religious etiquette class or ethics class, whatever they call it, where they have a priest come in and he teaches about religion, of the true religion of the world, and he teaches that the Baptists were they, back in the old days, the Baptists used to take and sacrifice kids and eat them on their altar. And but the kids believe it. They believe it there because that's what they were taught. So we're just hammering against the brick wall. We're hammering against the brick wall. When you hand out literature, when you're trying to invite people to church, whatever you're doing, you always got the sect. You're a sect, sectante, sectante. And it's very difficult. Above that, I'm trying to learn language. The Lord's really been blessing my family. My wife and kids can speak real good, and I can speak. I could say my name, Dan, in Ukrainian. No, I speak a lot of the language. I can use a lot more practice, though. I've prayed, Lord, if you're going to have me be here, I'm going to have to learn it to where I can actually preach in it. And I don't see that ever happening. It's a very difficult language for me to get a grip on. But between that, being so close to Poland, we have a lot of Polish speakers. So I have picked up a lot of Polish. I've picked up a lot of Ukrainian. And a lot of the older people are all Russian speakers, so I'm actually picking up a little bit of Russian, too, at the same time. So it's kind of a conglomeration of the languages. And the Lord gave me a real burden. Above that now, the Lord gave me a real burden for the deaf. So I've been learning Ukrainian sign language. And they actually have a sign now. It's like this. That sign to the deaf people in Lviv means Dan the American. So Dan the American. And that's their sign for me. But it's good to be known by him, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. It's just Dan the American. One of them's name is this, so they're all different. It's just, I'm glad I'm this and not this. But the people in Ukraine are when you get out of the country, you really notice that that people are not. They're not very friendly. They're very hard. They're Russian. They're former Soviet Union. They've been lied to for 70 years through the Soviet Union. And then for the last 11 years, they've been lied to over and over again by their own government up until this revolution where they're hoping they get some reform. And they've been just beat up. They've been really just beat up folks. And they will not open up to you at all for a year. Until you get to know them for a year, and then they'll open up. It's not like when I got back to America, it was surprising to me that people say hi, how you doing and stuff, you know. But you know, these people that are saying hi and stuff to you here, they aren't opening up to you either. They just got a flesh surface that's soft, and then they're hard on the inside. But the Ukrainian is the opposite; they're real hard on the outside, and then they're soft when you get into and you break that shell. And I got a couple people that I'm actually getting to that level with now that I can give a hug to, and I can talk to, and they're opening up now with the gospel. And the church is growing a little bit there in Ukraine, not very much, as best as be expected. The printing ministry is doing real well. I just printed 60,000 tracks for Perry Demopoulos in Kiev. And got the tracks off to him, and I was able to buy two more colored drums with the money. I had a church from Washington gave me some money for printing, and I bought two colored drums so I could print three colors now. And besides that, we have about 102 Russian King James Version Bibles. They just translated the King James Bible into Russian, and I just got them printing 102 of those. They're still sitting in my office over there in Ukraine. I came home basically to spend a little bit of time with my dad, with his cancer and everything going on with that. And I got to actually talk to my mom's sister, my Aunt Dolores, and tomorrow we're going down to Florida. I could do a little bit of get some money out of the bank and take care of some stuff at the King James Bible Society and buy some goodies to take back. And my wife is pregnant. So everything's just, you know, let's just pack it up, you know, just keep throwing it on top. But it's a blessing also. Now we're gonna have four boys, which means I'll be able to have a street preacher on every corner. That's a blessing. And yeah, well, you got to have somebody stop traffic. But it's kind of lonely over there. It gets lonely over there, and especially when you're not real smart to start with, you get over there and you push off a lot of the people that are basically trying to do the same thing you are. They're trying to see souls saved. They're trying to do right, but they're liberal. I mean, I could separate from them without destroying my fellowship with them. And what I ended up doing was I basically took my wife's only friend away from her by running them off. So it's a tight situation over there at times. It gets pretty bad. The Lord has blessed us with another couple. There's another couple named a fellow named Jack who's from Oklahoma. He's big time writer, but I've been working on him, trying to get him to loosen up a little bit on some of his doctrine, and he's actually seeing some stuff now in this Bible. Actually, Brother Dave gave me a couple of his Bibles, and he's starting to see some stuff in there that's really opening his eyes up. And his wife, he's got two kids, and his wife has good fellowship with my wife, and so she's got a friend now. I don't know. We go to the Carpathian Mountains. We try to evangelize the mountains once a week if we can. We try to make a. I wanted to make and hit it one village a week last year. We hit 54, so we actually made the goal of one a week last year. We took 36 tours, as I call them, 36 trips into the mountains for anywhere from a day trip to a 7-day trip out to the mountains, usually by the train or by public transportation in some way. Do got a van. Lord will bless us with a Sprinter. It's made by Mercedes. You see them around here. They're made by Dodge or Freightliner in the States now. It's the same corporation, Dodge, Benz, Daimler, whatever it is. It's Freightliner. It's a Freightliner corporation that Daimler, Benz, and Freightliner got together or something and made this Sprinter van. And it works great for us. It's got plenty of room to stack a bunch of tracks in there and then room to sleep in the back and take 4 or 6 people out there to the villages, whatever we can take. But there's a lot of work. As far as I know, I'm the only person that's going to the villages in the mountains. There's about 50,000 villages in Ukraine, and Brother Ken West in Kiev and Perry Demopoulos on the other side of Kiev, and myself are the only ones really evangelizing the mountains in Ukraine. We just trying to stay busy and do right, do what I can there.
They're not
really primitive. They don't have electricity. A lot of them. They don't. They'll have the wells. They're real simple places. It's just the weather's so bad over there. We went through one village. We took a train from Lviv clear down to Hungarian border to Uzhhorod and Mukachevo, a couple villages, and did some evangelism down there. And then coming back on the train about 3 days later, the same area we just went through, we had 5 feet of snow dumped on them in about 3 days. So it's very, the weather really tears up the villages. They got a lot of real shacky looking places. We got a letter back from a lady. She got a track in one of the villages and wrote the correspondence course, said she's an old widow lady. She's on a pension and she doesn't have no money, but she'd like to have material about the Lord. She got saved, and she wants a Bible. And she told us that her house has dirt floor. She doesn't even have a real floor in her house. But when you just go through a village, it's just little brick huts with grass tops. But there's nothing really primitive about them. You go to a village, and then half the people will have a TV set, if they have electricity in the village. And so they're catching up with the world just as fast as they can. Everybody in the whole country knows how to cuss in English now, so that's that's progress. So we're teaching them well by Hollywood there. So
are the villages mostly Catholic?
Villages are all Catholic. There's a couple of the mountains that are getting into are Orthodox from before, and there's also the Wicca, the national religions, like a Wicca tree worshiping sort of religion. But they don't really, those people don't really bother us. They got us. It seems like the people that are into that national religion, you can't really deal with, because they got that attitude that's like, okay, I'm glad you found something that makes you happy, and they're just They're despondent to the truth. They don't care what the truth is because I'm happy and I'm glad you found what makes you happy. But an Orthodox, what's a blessing about the Orthodox is they all know they're sinners. They all admit that they're sinners. Some of them even have a Bible. They just don't understand salvation. The Catholics, they're all full of pride. You can't. That's headbanging to try to get those people to understand anything. Yeah.
Did Perry say anything about coming back?
He's coming back this summer, I believe. For I don't know for how long. He's been having some hard times over there. He's calling up crying, and he just wants to get home. He needs a break. It's been a while since he's been home.
Run through the sequence of the election.
Oh, first boy. Back in November, they had an election. Yanukovych was the candidate from Moscow, supported by Putin, supported by Kuchma, who is the current president of Ukraine at the time. And no, that's Yushchenko. But anyways, Yanukovych was the one that was supported by Russia, basically. And before that election took place in November, they poisoned Yushchenko. Yanukovych's men did it. Yanukovych, God just kept him alive. I'm telling you, God kept him alive for some reason. But he had three attempts on his life taken. I'm going to see if I can find this verse, man. There's a... I'm trying to find it. No. Anyways, the Lord showed me a verse about that, about that whole election, and you could just see God's hand in getting Yushchenko into office, because Yanukovych, they tried to kill this guy three times. They tried to poison him once. They actually ran him off the road with a semi-truck once. And the third time, there was two guys they caught from Russia that were sitting in a car full of explosives on his normal routine, his normal path, and they caught him in the car before they blew the car up, and they admitted that they were trying to kill him. But three attempts on the guy's life, and they weren't able to kill him. After the first election took place, it was obvious. Our country, the city of Lviv, has about 800,000 people in it, and right after the election, before the results were in, there was already nearly 100,000 people on the streets saying that Yushchenko won, which is about an eighth of the population. And then the election came out, and he lost by 50%. So, I mean, it was just obvious that it was just a bad election. That was the second election. The first election was when all the candidates ran. I believe there was 15 candidates or something like that. And in that election, Yushchenko won like 47%, but you have to win by 50% in order to be president of Ukraine. So that was they had to run that election over again with the top two people, which is Yushchenko and Yanukovych. After that first election went sour, the people just flooded the streets. Me and a friend of mine were on the street at the time. We were doing some evangelism, and there was maybe maybe 60,000 people in the streets at that time, and the universities let off, and I was like, wow, this is more people than I've ever seen in my life in one place standing around. And then the universities emptied, and there was another 70,000 that came out of the universities from around. And then after that, all the factories started closing, and the workers from the factories. And before it was over, there was about 150,000 in Lviv, and there was 1.12 million in Kiev on the streets protesting. In Kiev, they have a square area where the presidential palace is. It's called Maidan, and it's on a street called Krashatik. And the Russian Kuchma ordered 1,340 Russian Spetsnaz, special forces from Russia, to come down and guard Maidan, guard the government, the presidential palace there, to make sure nobody got into the thing. And what happened was they were told that if more than 50 people break through into Maidan, that they were to open fire into the crowd. And that was given by the embassy, the American embassy. They told us that over there on the field. They were that. And what happened, was 1.2 million got into Maidan. They about a half an hour before they opened fire on the crowd, they heard that a group called Pora was there. And Pora is the student military, the old Soviet, the ones that got the Russian Revolution started and all that are the Pora. And it means now. Pora means now. Pora was armed with AK-47s, and they were for Yushchenko. So what happened was the Russian Spetsnaz were getting ready to fire into the crowd, and they got the order to pull back because Pora was armed and coming in with the crowd. And they said they were within a half an hour of having a gun battle in Maidan, which is the same thing that happened over and over again in the former Soviet countries. They seem like they like to have big shootout spills. But that, like I said, you could just see the Lord's hand working through that whole entire thing to get that election taking place. It was, I mean, within a half an hour of a gun battle, that was just nothing happened. And after they finally took over Maidan, Pora put up tents, made tent cities, and they had 70,000 people that were sleeping on the streets in tents in the center, and they said they weren't leaving until Yushchenko got his position as president. At that time, Yanukovych was voted in as president. They gave him the presidency because he won the election, supposedly, though it was false. And that's when all the governments from around the world started saying that we didn't appreciate the election and all that. And then over the next 2 weeks or so, from all over the world, there was people coming in. There was Australians and Germans and French and Georgians. The Georgians, you know, the Georgia just had what they called the velvet or the violet colored revolution or something right before, maybe a month or two before Ukraine's, and so they had a bunch of them came up, and for the Orange Revolution they called this one, and so they had just camps of different groups of different nations of people just all over the country, mainly all around Kiev, and the parliament decided that they were going to go ahead and re-vote and have another re-election. And this new re-election came out, and Yushchenko won just hands down. And of course, yeah, which was what happened in the second election, but it wasn't legal. But what it all boiled down to was just finally the Yushchenko fella got in office. The guy who got the chemical on his face got in office, and it's been business as usual over there since. He hasn't really done any big changes. The biggest change in there right now is the SPOL, the Ukrainian Special Forces Police. They've always been communists all along, ever since the communist days, and they were always against Christianity and didn't know nothing to do with God and all that, except for the Orthodox Church or the Catholic Church. And the new president Yushchenko actually put in a National Baptist as the head of the SBUL. He's the head of it now. So that was unheard of, that they'd have a sectantian and as the president of the people that persecuted the Christians. But it definitely opened up some religious freedom for us, but it also opened up some westernization, which means the people are going to get harder to the gospel, being that they have stuff, and so they don't need God if they have heaven here. Yes, sir.
At any time you were there, other than the time when they had all these people pouring out into the streets and that, did you ever feel like your life was threatened because maybe something, a person or a group of people said to you, or get any kind of letters or phone calls or anything like that?
I mean, you mean about the election?
No,
just America being there. Actually, when we went into Iraq, they had a couple of the stores in the center had signs that says, "We will not serve Americans," on their signs in front of their stores. They just didn't want us in their stores. So we just do them the favor, we just don't go to their stores. Fine, there's plenty of places to buy their junk, you know. But when it comes to the election, me and my friend, like I was saying, we were down here in the center trying to do some evangelism, and one of those students came out just It was just a wall of people like you never seen, and you couldn't move nowhere. We just got. He said, "I'll meet you back at the bookstore over, you know, where our print shop is." And he went that way. I could see the crowd just took him, and he went that way, and I went that way with the crowd. And I, man, there's no way to even know where you were going. You're just following the crowd, trying to get out of it, with that many people pushing you through it. But they really love Americans over there. They do. They love to speak English, and I think that's one of the hardest parts about learning the language is I'll go and stumble through the letters with them trying to say something to them, and then they'll start speaking to me in English just because they want to speak English. And so, yeah. So. Yeah. Oh, that was Yoda. Like I said, there's some Ukrainians that are starting to soften up that I can actually feel, you know, friendship with and relationship with. One is a fellow named Yoda, and he's a history teacher and at the university. And I asked him what he thought of this whole entire election. I thought if there's going to be any kind of problems or what. And he said, I don't know. And I said, what are you guys going to do as a nation? He said, well, I'm going to go sharpen my axe. So they were ready to fight. They were right on the brink of it. They wanted to get out from under that. I'll give you a prime example of what happens. The president of the country, Kuchma, goes up and cries on the world market of the world, wherever the world, in front of a bunch of rich people that steal money from their people and give it to other countries. And he went up and cried in front of this place about how we need $700 million to build a bridge. And so Austria... Oh, poor Ukrainians, they don't have no money. They gave him $700 million. Well, the guy who was in charge holding that $700 million was end up shot. They said he committed suicide. He shot himself once back here, and then he shot himself once up here. Yeah, wanted to be sure. But he committed suicide, and the $700 million was missing. And that's politics in Ukraine. Yeah, he's probably... But that's, yes, sir. We have a class for like the younger kids right now, and we're still working on trying to get one for the older and adults and stuff like that. I'm really shying away from that because I don't want a bunch of people to sit around wanting to speak English and don't want to hear the gospel. And I feel like that's what it ends up being. Is I'm not a Methodist. I'm not going over to teach English. I want to try to get the gospel to them. If there's some people that are coming to church, I wouldn't mind setting up an English class for, you know, and then come hear me speak English when I preach. He'll translate to Ukrainian after I, you know. But I don't want to just sit around and speak English with a bunch of people who care less about God. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, that's what happens now. That's Yoda, the fellow Yoda I was telling you about. He translates for me whenever I preach or whatever. He taught me how to speak a lot slower. No.
Luke's violin teacher came from Moldova 6 years ago. So he's got the strong Orthodox background, and we have witnessed to him time and time again. And today we spent most of the day with him. We went down to Indianapolis and went to an orchestra down there, so we took him with us. And it seems to us that his scales are starting to come off. But his grandparents had a farm when the Soviets came in 1918 and just carted him off. And so he'll tell you about the reason why they're so hard is because on the outside is because they had to, in essence, live a lie. If they say they weren't communists, they'd get shot. But their hearts knew communism was wrong. And so, like, his dad was a teacher, and his dad would have him secretly baptized in the Orthodox Church. But yet he was a communist teacher. And so his dad taught them how to deal with the KGB. And it's funny, he tells me, I come to America, these police come talk to me, and I laugh. I said, I dealt with the KGB. Who are you? And so that's why they're so hard on the outside, because they've been, like Dan says, lied to for so long. Lied to by the religion, lied to by government. And so who do you trust? You don't trust anybody. And so we're just praying more and more for Luke's teacher that we can get a clear-cut salvation out of him. He just keeps going with the Orthodox teaching. He says the Catholic Church is a kind of like a rogue organization that came out of the Orthodox. The Orthodox were the original ones. And so just, if you would, pray for his violin teacher. He's a fine, moral man, real upright character. And we just pray that, you know, he'll give you the right words for salvation, but we're just not certain as far as the heart goes. And so he thought he could pick up English in about 3 months, but he said it took him 9 months. Can you imagine that? Knows French, Russian, Ukraine, you know, whatever, all these different languages. Picked up English in 9 months. I've been at it for 47 and hadn't got it figured out yet. You ain't got no. That's right. Yeah. So it's a blessing to have Dan back home. But he's got to do some running too next week or so, I suppose. So, okay, how about some prayer requests that you'd like to...
People pray for.
Anybody have anything? Uh-huh.